Welcome back to the Florida History Podcast. I'm Carter Krishnire.
And I'm Robert Bucciolato.
So, Robert, this is a special edition of the Florida History Podcast that we're recording late September 2022, with Hurricane Ian potentially on its way to deliver a hammer blow to some part of the Sunshine State, whether it's the Big Bend region, the Western Panhandle, or the West Coast of the state. And September and hurricanes are really synonymous in this state. And when you think of September, you think of the Labor Day storm of 1935, the worst ever hurricane to hit the state of Florida. And that storm, actually the worst ever hurricane on record to hit the United States, that storm was one of the great tragedies, and written extensively about it at the Florida Squeeze, one of the great tragedies in American history, the needless death of so many World War I veterans, and the sort of part-time holiday weekend. It was Labor Day weekend, obviously. Labor Day storm of 1935, as it's known, Keys hurricane. Labor Day, Weather Bureau guys playing golf, late arrival of trains to evacuate these World War I workers who were working on the overseas railroad, and just one of the worst disasters in the history of this state. And so I have to talk a little bit about the Bonus Army, right? I think we need to start there. The March on Washington in 1932, that gets beat back by such luminaries as Douglas MacArthur, General Patton, General MacArthur and General Patton, with Herbert Hoover as the president. And that Bonus Army then is finally put to work. Well, actually, let's talk about the Bonus Army first, and then this will kind of give some background on why they were working, where they were working, when the 1935 storm hit.
This was a time when this country was, you know, the Great Depression. It was crippled. We didn't have the instruments to combat it in terms of injecting capital into the economy. There was no safety net or ladder to enable people who had lost their jobs to save their homes, to pull themselves back up from poverty. So it was a pretty awful time. And then you have all these veterans who were trying to get their benefits from their service in the First World War early. And they made, would you call it a shanty town in Washington?
Yeah,
that was a pretty big establishment. MacArthur came in and pretty much destroyed them. And we can go back and forth. I mean, it's never really been confirmed how much involvement the President Herbert Hoover had in some of the tactics that General MacArthur used. Although, you know, he never really had a real tendency to listen to authority, including those made by the President. But anyway, it was pretty disastrous. You know, a huge part of D.C. caught on fire, people died. And upon hearing that news, FDR actually famously said that this will wreck me. And so, again, there's we're not going to talk too much into it, but it is something that a lot of us can resonate with, the fact that it was a really bad recession or depression. There was some uncertainty on how and what we were going to move forward with, and there was some actual rioting and violence in the streets, and all of that was the backdrop of a pretty important presidential election between an incumbent president and an opposing figure who had different political views, really very different views about the role of government.
So FDR obviously wins the election in 1932. We know all about the New Deal. We know about the 100 days, the great flurry of activity that FDR pushed through the Congress in those first 100 days he was in office in order to get jumpstart the economy, put people back to work, and really kind of raise the morale of Americans and of America. One of the elements of that was putting the bonus army to work, making good with these World War I veterans who fought for this country. And a large number of them were sent to the Keys to work on construction. And so they're working in labor camps. They're able to send money back to their families. Things are good. And spirit is high, morale is high among the men. There are these labor camps in the Florida Keys. And then suddenly in August 1935, there is talk of shutting down the camps, and it becomes a big political issue, both in the state of Florida and federally. It didn't matter because weeks later, the camps would be wiped out and hundreds of these men would be lost. Let's talk a little bit about the hurricane. It's Labor Day, 1935. It is the strongest storm on record to ever hit the United States, as I mentioned earlier. At 882 millibars central pressure, lowest minimum central pressure I think ever recorded for a storm in the Atlantic Basin. Now, it might have been storms in the 1780s. 1770s and 1780s were particularly destructive for hurricanes in the Atlantic, so maybe it's certainly the highest since then, or the lowest central pressure, the strongest storm, over 200 miles per hour sustained winds. And it was a storm that had been forecast wrongly and had a rapid intensification cycle, as we're sort of seeing with Ian, right? And which we saw with Michael in 2018, and we saw with Andrew in 1992. We've seen it with Charlie in 2004. A number of storms that have hit Florida have gone through this, and everything was botched bureaucratically. I mean, you had weather bureau officials who go out and play golf because it's Labor Day weekend. They're not answering their phones. Obviously, communication is very different then. There's no effort to evacuate the men until it's too late. And there's even logistical problems. I don't want to get too deep into this, right? We have a lot to cover on this podcast, this special podcast. But there are logistical mistakes once they do authorize the relief. It's a disaster. It's one of the most tragic events in American history, and certainly in Florida history, I think in American history. And it has been properly chronicled since, right? Obviously, there's lots of documentaries out on this and books and what have you. Even if at the time it wasn't recognized for the absolute absolutely, I can't even express my indignation about this. And in fact, I'm someone who has regularly gone down to Lower Matacomb Key to go to the memorial or is it Upper Matacomb? Well, wherever it is, mile marker 73 on Overseas Highway. I've gone regularly to pay my respects to those veterans who gave their lives in this absolute folly.
And it's you know, just to give a little bit of backdrop, when we mentioned, you know, the camps, in Florida during this time, there was about 50,000 Floridians, that were working in these camps and projects like, the Civilian Conservation Corps, and they would, live and work in these work camps, and they would send their pay home. And this was, you know, there was a reason why they were all living in those camps. It was to cut down living expenses and things like that. These were very desperate people. So they were the kind of people that wouldn't willingly leave a workplace where you were getting paid for something like a hurricane if, you know, you were hearing conflicting things about it, which, you know, there was no united mass, everybody needs to get out.
Yeah.
There was little things that were sort of trickling in and out, and so there was really, as there always is in hurricanes, there's that whole, you know, will I regret it if I stay, should I stay, should I go? Although in this case, it was sort of unceremonious because it was this, as we just saw there was so many different programs that were being operated on at this time. I mean, just dozens. And it made the job of the bureaucrat more difficult because everything was untested. There were people that were given responsibilities that really had no business being responsible for anything, but there was no real means test to determine the effectiveness of these new executives and these new department heads. And there was no trained or experienced work pool to sort of take these veteran workers sort of merit-based and make them leading officials. So it was just, you know, everything was so new and so fresh, and it was just an absolute disaster.
Yeah.
From top to bottom.
I should, again, reiterate that they did finally make the decision to evacuate them, but it was too late. And even that, there were a bunch of snafus that I think we did a podcast on this before, maybe, where we discussed this. If not, I put it in a couple of articles on the Florida Squeeze website. And I should mention that this storm affected the Upper Keys almost exclusively. Strongest hurricane in American history, 882 millibars, as I mentioned. But we're accustomed to hurricanes affecting Key West. Hurricane Irma that made landfall 5 years ago, that's a particularly painful memory, I think, for all of us in the state of Florida. That made landfall at Cujo Key, which is in the Lower Keys. So this was an Upper Keys storm, which is also pretty rare. The only other storm I can remember that made landfall in the Upper Keys was Hurricane Inez in 1966. There may have been a storm in like the mid-40s, I think, may have made landfall in Key Largo, and then gets immortalized in the Bogey and McCall movie Key Largo. Right, which is fictional, but there had been a hurricane that affected Key Largo, I think in 45 or so. But the Upper Keys don't get quite the attention from being hurricane ravaged as the Lower Keys do and as Keys West does, but this was an Upper Keys event. Anyway, moving on. 1960, Hurricane Donna made landfall in South Florida and really did a number on the southern part of the peninsula, and then made a second landfall in southwest Florida, curved north, and went all the way up the East Coast. That was in early September 1960. It was the first major hurricane to hit Florida. It was a Cat 4 when it made landfall in the Keys, and in fact, this is another storm. I just said that there were only a few storms, that there were more storms that impacted the Lower Keys than the Upper Keys, or more famous storms that impacted the Lower Keys. But in fact, this was a storm that did more of a number on the Upper Keys, again, like the 35 hurricane. Though its landfall was actually in the Middle Keys, just east of the 7 Mile Bridge, but most of the bad weather in Donna was in the northeast quadrant. So really, Key Largo, Isla Mirada, those areas got ravaged. It does an odd turn. It goes and really did a lot of damage to Fort Myers. And the reason why Donna is such a famous hurricane is because it was the first major hurricane to hit Florida after Florida's population explosion began. Right, the 1950s were a huge decade of population explosion in Florida. Florida went from, I believe maybe in the 1950s, Florida actually passed a bunch of other southern states in population. I have to look at this, but I want to say Florida was the least populated or one of the least populated states in the Southeast in 1950. Even though there had been great growth during World War II, still Florida had fewer people, I believe, than South Carolina, had more than Arkansas. Okay, so bigger than Arkansas, but fewer people than South Carolina, Tennessee, certainly fewer people than North Carolina in 1950, fewer people than Georgia or Virginia, and by 1960 had more people than all those states. So the 19 a storm in 1950 that had made a direct hit on Miami, Hurricane King, and there were a couple other storms that impacted the state, but nothing like what we had seen. 1947 was an epic year for hurricanes in the state. Most famous was the Great Fort Lauderdale Hurricane of 1947, but there were actually two other storms that hit the southern part of the peninsula that year, and that led to all sorts of channelization of rivers and damage done by the Army Corps of Engineers. They did incredible damage to the Kissimmee River, which had a flooding problem after the Fort Lauderdale storm. And now they've had to undo a lot of that, and it had horrible ecological damage. But point is, Donna was the first storm in the memory of many Floridians who had not experienced something like this. And it was etched in the memories. And then the 1960s, they kept coming. Hurricane Dora, let's talk about that, Robert. That was when Hayden Burns was governor. Hurricane Cleo also hit that same month. Hurricane Cleo hit South Florida, Miami, Fort Lauderdale area. Hurricane Dora hit Northeast Florida, and a lot of damage into the interior of the state, Lake City, Live Oak.
Horrible flooding.
And fortunately, we've talked about this on previous shows, Robert. I stand corrected. Ferris Bryant was the governor of Florida during the storm, and Hayden Burns was the mayor of Jacksonville and was the Democratic nominee for governor. And these were the type of officials that really weren't that attuned to getting aid quickly and relief quickly to the people of the state. He then had the next year, Hurricane Betsy ripped through South Florida. Wasn't handled particularly well, again, by the governor, Hayden Burns, Labor Day time, and was really kind of an absolute disaster. Then in 1975, we had a storm called Eloise that did a lot of damage in the Panhandle. September storm, a famous storm, really the only significant hurricane to impact Florida in like a 15-year period, honestly. I mean, we had some small storms, but that was a big one. Panama City, Fort Walton Beach, that area really hit badly. And then, 4 years later, 1979, we had a funny storm called David that had ravaged the Caribbean, but had weakened to a Category 1 storm by the time it approached Florida. Then it approached Florida as a Cat 1 storm, made a landfall around Palm Beach or south of Palm Beach, Lake Worth, South Palm Beach area, central Palm Beach County, and hugged the coast, really never came inland. The worst weather stayed off the coast. And we've had some other examples of recently, Matthew in 2016, although that did a lot of damage in Northeast Florida as it hugged the coast, but in South Florida, kind of similar, it stayed, but really not that far offshore. And then Isais, more recently in 2020, that was on my birthday. I remember that well, being under a hurricane warning in Broward County. And it's staying, the center of circulation staying maybe 15 miles offshore, and the west side of the storm being pretty meek. That was the deal with David in 79. It made a landfall. It technically hit Palm Beach County directly. The worst weather stayed offshore. There was some damage in Fort Pierce and West Palm Beach and Jupiter, those areas, but much more damage up in Georgia and South Carolina than in Georgia, especially, than in Florida. And then, obviously, in the 90s, 80s and 90s, we didn't have any serious September storms in Florida. But I should mention, Robert, you're old enough to remember this. 1999, Hurricane Floyd was barreling towards the peninsula. It turns at the last minute and ends up hitting North Carolina. I mean, in fact, I mean, it did damage, serious damage to the Bahamian Islands, really up until the last line of defense before Florida, right? If you want to call it that, before it turned north. Dorian did something very similar in 2019.
Well, you know, and I was hoping you'd mention this because famously there used to be this, I'm sure they still have it now, but there was this local news station, Channel 7 News.
Yes.
And they had I'm sure they still do, have a very Latin feel to it.
And a very sensational,
yes,
reputation.
I mean, you're kind of, it's almost like you're watching a telenovela at certain points. And the person was talking about the weather, and he just screamed, it kind of zoomed in on him, and he just screamed, "It's coming right for us." And it was just...
Yeah, I think that there was a sensationalism that kicked in after Andrew and after Floyd. And so when 2004 rolled around and Charlie had just happened in Southwest Florida and had gone right up the state and had done a lot of damage in Arcadia and Bartow and these places inland, even the western part of Orange County, right? And then we had a Labor Day storm in Hurricane Francis that approached South Florida as a Cat 4, but got weakened as it kind of sat over the Bahamas and pounded them for days, made landfall as a Cat 2. And then 3 weeks later, Hurricane Jean hits the same spot, Sewell's Point, in southern, or actually kind of central Martin County, right? It just kept coming, right? We had Ivan actually hit the Panhandle, or he technically hit Alabama, but much of the worst weather was in the Panhandle, including the I-10 bridge collapse. That was the week after Labor Day when it approached, and it was between Francis and Jean, actually. Francis and Jean were only 3 weeks apart. So 2004 was horrible. We know 2005 was horrible, although Florida did not get hit in September in 2005. It was Dennis hitting the Panhandle in July, August. Katrina, first landfall was actually in the Fort Lauderdale area, often forgotten. First U.S. landfall as a Cat 1. Then, obviously, did what it did. One of the worst tragedies in recent American history. That was in August. Then Wilma, which we've done a podcast on, that was in October, late October. So 2016 Hermine, which impacted the Panhandle, was the first direct hit on the state since Wilma. That was in September. And obviously Irma in 2017, which everybody, I think, listening to this podcast remembers. We don't need to go through the history of that, Robert. Michael was in October in 2018. Dorian in 2019 threatened Florida, and ultimately parts of... large parts of Florida were put under a hurricane warning, but it turned north. Isais was in August. So, yeah, let's just hope for the best, praying and hoping for everybody out there when it comes to Hurricane Ian. I know, Robert, you're going to need to prepare too. So that's it for this week. We'll be back next week with kind of a more normal podcast, historical podcast, which isn't necessarily dealing with, it will be dealing with temporary events because we're going to be going into sort of historical election coverage beginning next week on the Florida History Podcast. Thank you once again for listening.